You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Well, hello, friends. In this episode, I'm going to introduce you to Laura Erickson, and we talk about career change. So career change is definitely one of the most popular topics on the show. What's wonderful about this conversation, in my humble opinion as the host, and of course, I think it's great. I think all the conversations are great. I'm not biased at all. One of the things that I think that you'll enjoy is that we talk about all the other things that were going on in Laura's life that came together to support this decision that she made in her life. Because we're talking about career change and work takes up a huge amount of our life. And in this conversation, I think Laura even says at one point that today she could describe work as her life, but decisions aren't always made in a vacuum. Right. And so usually it's different things, a lot of things coming together to make these big decisions happen. Are you ready? Of course you are. Let's do it. Laura Erickson, welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm happy you're here. Are you ready for a fun chat today?
I am ready. Thanks for having me.
Oh, yay. All right. I always start with the very same question for all of my guests. What part of the world are you in today?
I am so happy to say I am in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, which is rare for me. This is where I live, but I'm not here very often.
Oh, all right. Very good. We're going to talk more about that, I think, in a second. Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Good to hear. Next question, totally inspired by the time of year when this is going to release, which is just right after the start of 2026. How do you feel, Laura, about New Year's resolutions? Do you love them? Do you hate them? Could you just don't have an opinion at all? Where do you weigh in?
I feel like I kind of like unofficially have them, but I'm certainly not the person that like signs up for a gym membership and says I'm going to do a bunch of, you know, stuff. I don't think there's a huge difference between December and January. I think it's a good time to like reflect on things to change, but I feel like I'm always kind of doing that and like goal setting throughout the year. So I would say I'm an unofficial resolution person, but probably not the best.
And what I hear you say is that you're big on goal setting and development, but it doesn't have to be January 1st or 2nd.
Yeah, like the calendar doesn't really have any, I don't know what day it is most time. So.
I think that's a really valid opinion. You know, one of the times that I do fall into the excitement sometimes of setting New Year's resolutions, but another time that I find myself feeling that like, restart, set it up, sort of calendar stuff is whenever the new school year would be, which I think was just ingrained
fall.
Into me into like as a child. It's like, now is when we go and buy the binders and this is when we, you know, set up our goals. So I think that, and like you said, it's like you can do it on any random, you know, Thursday morning. So it doesn't have to be January 1st.
And I think for me, I've spent the last like 3 New Years in Cuba, which is very off the grid. I spent the whole month of January this year in Cuba. So that is not the place to probably like start something new. I'm definitely not going to the gym when I'm traveling or doing any of those things. So I think that's part of it too, is like, I'm generally not even around at home to have like a normal, life to reset on January 1st. So
got it. I totally get it. All right. So we are going to talk today about a choice you made in changing your career. And I am lucky enough that I get to have a conversation about career change with lots of people. And I love it. It's one of my favorite conversations to have. It's definitely a part of adulting that most people go through and a lot of people are unprepared for. So that's really, really helpful. Let's start with this as a question. Let's talk about the stable career that you had before you made the change. What was that?
Yeah, I worked at a technical college for 14 years, so higher education. Did several jobs there, but most recently, I think for the last 8 years of my career, I was the director of a student services department. So had a very stable, you know, 9 to 5, the benefits, the salary. I had 20 employees, all the, you know, I had a good job. There was really no reason to leave it.
So let's talk about that, though. Like, so tell us more about you. You were in higher education in this job at a technical college. How did you get there? Was this something that you dreamt of, that you planned for and strove towards? Like, how did you get to that point?
When I was younger, I went to college for Spanish and psychology. Came out of college, I think I bartended for the Green Bay Packers for a year. And I
Nice.
was, yeah, I'm from Green Bay, so that's where I'm from. So I went home for a year after college, lived with my parents like a loser, and tried to figure out what I was gonna do. So I bartended for the Packers, and then I decided I wanted to. I think a lot of people go to college and they get the degree. As a person who worked in career and tech ed can tell you, a lot of people go to college without knowing what they actually want to do. It's like you get the degree, you know what you want to study, but you don't necessarily think about like what actual job you're going to get when you graduate. And I think career and tech ed is different in that like it's very tied to actual career placement and like you know what actual job you're going to be employed in when you're done. Whereas 4-year universities tend to be a little bit more like willy-nilly. They let you just take all the classes and rack up all the debt, and they shoot you out into the world, and then you have to figure it out. So, with Spanish and psychology, I had no idea what I was going to do with that. But I did love to travel, and so this all like kind of comes full circle later on in my story. But I wanted to teach English as a foreign language. I had studied abroad in Spain. I went back to Spain right after college for 3 months and got my TEFL, teaching English as a foreign language. So I decided like that made sense for me with psychology and Spanish, and I loved teaching, and so that's what I just kind of like sought out to do. And I ended up getting a job in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, where I live now, and I was their bilingual instructional assistant, particularly for their Spanish-speaking population. So that's how I started, and then I worked my way up, over 14 years, got a master's degree, and worked my way up in the college and was really passionate about education. And like I said, as a person who went to traditional 4-year university, I found a lot of value in 2-year education, and 1 year into your education and getting students in and out as quickly as possible with as minimal amount of debt and as high, sometimes really high earning potential compared to 4-year universities. So I was really happy there.
So the student debt in the United States is a huge topic of
It's
conversation
insane.
lately. It really is crazy. And for people who, so I will turn 52, well, I'll be 52 when this episode drops. It was completely different when I was in going through college than it is for kids these days. It's astronomically expensive. And also the borrowing rules have changed, not in the favor of the borrowee, in my opinion, but I'm not an expert to talk about that. But I want to back up a little tiny bit. Anytime I'm talking to somebody who has like an expertise like you do, I want to make sure that we bring all of the audience up to speed for what things are. So you were working at a technical school, which that's so it's 1 and 2 years. Is that so? Talk a little bit more about what that means and the difference then between that and a 4-year college university.
Yeah, I think a lot of people think this is kind of, there's a stigma with going to a 2-year college. I think a lot of people would probably just label it like a community college. And when I went to college, that's where people went when maybe they weren't,
When
quote
you
unquote,
didn't have the grades.
smart enough to go to real college, right? I think that is the perception, and it is so wrong. Community colleges and technical colleges also are very different things. Technical colleges are focused on technical trades. And so, which technically, it's not even really that technical. It could be healthcare, it could be electrical power distribution, it could be welding, nursing, radiology, like all these different things. There's criminal justice. So, I think the big difference, and there is an overlap with 4-year education in some of those degrees, but it's basically giving you the skills that you need to do the job and not all of the liberal arts. I'm not going to call it BS because I think there's value in that, but it's getting you in and out to do the job as quickly as possible without all of the like exploration of career.
It's a
Like I've
much more defined sounds to me like it's a much more defined goal at the beginning. It's like
Yes,
we go
you go
in.
in knowing I want to be a nurse. And so you can be a nurse with a 2-year degree, and you also can be a nurse with a 4-year degree, and you can go on and on and on. But a lot of times you don't need this 4-year education to do a lot of these jobs. So technical education really focuses on those core classes that actually make you employable to do the job. And like I said, there's really no like, when I get out, what am I going to do? It's just like, I'm going to be a nurse, I'm going to be a welder, I'm going to be a foreman, whatever it is. So, definitely, though, like I said, there's a big misconception on why people go to technical college. I think it's definitely not because they're not smart enough. And in fact, I think a lot of those people make a lot more money and then have a lot more debt. So in the long run, they are the smart ones.
No, there's definitely that. And the so I've got all these kids in my family, and one of the things that I say to them and their friends is that, a college degree with a liberal arts school, or I guess they're all liberal arts school, but a 4-year or graduate degree, it's not always something you would consider job training. It's like you're getting a
No, it's
degree.
life experience.
Yeah, you're getting a degree, but the job, the number of people who we all know as adults who studied, a million different things, and then their actual job is something completely different. And so many of us live through that. It's not always true. The person who knows at
No.
7 years old they want to be a surgeon, they study to be that, and they do that. That's the example that everybody knows. But, the number of people who have degrees in education who go into business, or psychology who go into, whatever, it's like it's not always a match.
History.
They're, oh, history, right? History. And similar to, oh, yeah, history, English. I have a college kid right now who really wants to study English, but is battling the fact that it's like, oh, what is it going to be? What is it, what is it going to mean for my life? And I'm like, what it's going to mean for your life is you will go to graduate school. So,
Right. Yeah,
let's
and I think that
be.
is the reality now. Like when you go to a 4-year, I would be curious what the percentage of people is that either go on to get a master's degree because they feel like they
Yeah.
have to, or they go back and get a different degree later in life. And I feel like I see that a lot where
A
people,
huge amount of times.
they go to college at 18, their brain isn't even fully developed, and they pick some random, I want to do pottery or whatever, and then they
Yes.
rack up the debt, and then they get onto the real world, and they're like, oh shit, yeah, no, this doesn't make sense. They end up, fumbling
Yes.
around, and then at some point they end up going back, and often it is in a 2-year school, and they're like, okay, well, I already had that college experience. Now I
Yes.
just need to get in, get out, get the job.
Well, one of the things that, yeah, I know, like, I don't even know how many people, right? But one of the things that's really interesting about that is that the college experience, and I've never checked it for a technical school, speaking for like the audience of women who make families, they frequently people when they have young kids will go be like, that thing I studied before, that's not, I now know that's not what I want to do. Now I have this new interest and they want to go back to school. But traditional education is not designed for somebody who's 37, 45, 65. People do it. Like, I'm not gonna say people don't do it, but the financing isn't designed for adults who are running a life. The schedule is not designed for people who have a life. None of those things. And it's a really interesting thing because it is out of sync. It is very out of sync with the people who would want to do this. And then, so people who, I'll give you an example of somebody I know, in their 60s, and has a career and stuff, but has a passion for psychology. And would love to study that, but does not have any interest in a 4-year bachelor's degree starting with psychology 101 and sitting in a classroom with 18-year-olds talking. Right? It's just very interesting how it is. There's a gap. But we are off topic. We are off topic because you have that happens sometimes. All right. So if I had met you. All right, so you studied Spanish and psychology, and when you were in college, you wanted to be a language teacher. If I had met you when you were younger, middle school, 13 to 15 years old, what was your dream then of what you wanted to do?
When I look back at, like old notebooks and things like that, I know I wanted to be a teacher or an actress,
Ah, okay, very interesting.
which like makes zero sense for me now because I hate being like anything like that. Like I hate being on stage. I hate having lines. Like doesn't make sense. Doesn't make sense. But I did love at the time, like I was in dance class and I loved like Odyssey of the Mind and theater and things like that as a kid. So I just
All
don't
right.
like actually being watched.
Like to be the center of the attention. That's okay.
No.
That's very good. All right. So, still setting up the stage for the change. Your job is only one part of your life as an adult. That's true for all of us, right? Like this gets mixed up in work-life balance, but it really is. It's a big part. It's an important part, but our career is only a part of who we are. What else was going on in this time of your life before you made this job change?
Yeah, and it's funny because we're not talking about my job now, but my job now like really is my life.
Yeah.
There's very little separation. But previously, when I had what, the quote unquote 9 to 5, where work started and ended at a scripted time of day, I think a big part of my whole story is that I was in a 10-year relationship, I was married, and I decided to leave my marriage in, I think, 2017, around then. I got divorced. And so I think that was kind of like the beginning of this whole, I would say from 2018 when I got divorced to 2020 with the pandemic, like I was definitely in this big transition, this life transition of really starting over. And so that's kind of what like slowly kicked all of this off. And then the pandemic, like, which I don't think this is an uncommon story. The pandemic, put everybody's lives into perspective, and that's when the Great Resignation happened, and that's when everybody just threw their hands up in the air and said, "I'm done," one way or another, or was forced to be done with something. So,
It's a really wild thing because so we'll be 6 years out from lockdown,
which is crazy.
right? And still, so many of the stories I talk to people about, there's a connection to that time because it was in our generation, in our lifetime, right? It's the only example that I have of a situation that happened to almost everybody we know worldwide at the same time, and it forced so many big changes on such a group of people, and gave us. Most of us a little extra navel gazing time, but through parts of our life into reflection that maybe, not all of us were looking for. And it's a little bit different for everybody, but there's more than one marriage I know that did not make it through lockdown because, you just couldn't live with the person. And it gave us all the people who had kids in school, gave us a window into their education that we maybe didn't have before. It's a very interesting thing to look back on. I mean, I know people are tired of talking about it. And I respect that, but it is interesting how so far out it is still an impact on so many things. And I think if we went back 100 years, there might be like I mean, I didn't live through any of the world wars, but maybe those were similar, like sort of cultural things. But I don't have every way to do that. But so in your story, you'd made this relationship change pre-lockdown, pre-pandemic. You get a divorce, you're going through personal introspection and so on and so forth. Let's talk about it a little bit. Let's lay it out so that we're all on the same page, the lead up for this, because it matters in the decision you made. So you studied abroad, you have this language degree, you get a job in education in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. You have, we'll call it, for lack of better vocabulary, the permanent relationship. You get married, right? You're building this life in Eau Claire. And you're doing this, and as part of your discovery, I think, is that you after you get divorced, you realize that you had made some decisions that didn't align with who you wanted to be. That's an, yeah. So, yeah, talk about that. That wasn't phrased as a question, but that is
It's
the question.
okay. Yeah, I got you. I'm following. So when I got divorced, I think as many people do, you have this. I saw it as an opportunity. I think I talk about divorce a lot. I'm on a lot of divorce podcasts, and I think that's because a lot of people who get divorced like see it as the end of their life. I see it as the end of your life as you know it. And the opportunity to start over. And so, granted, I was the one that wanted my divorce, but I still wasn't like happy. But I
Well,
was like,
I've
all
never met
right.
anybody who likes the process of divorce. Even if
Yeah,
you're
like
happy with the result,
I
nobody
was
is like,
happy to
wow, that was
be.
fun.
Yeah, like I think it's what I mean by that is I'm the person that initiated the divorce. So, of course, it's easier for me than the person on the other side and whatever. But I still was not like happy to start over and financially start over and have to do everything on my own and all of that. That was hard. But with that, I was like, all right, well, here we are. Like, this is the situation. So we're going to make the best of it. So, like, what are some things that I didn't get to do before or that I've lost somewhere along the way? And a big thing for me was travel. It was, I grew up traveling internationally. My parents had taken me to like Venezuela as a kid. I'd got, studied abroad in Spain, lived in Spain twice. Like I think I always thought I was going to travel more as an adult. And when I look back, I'd gone to Mexico like 15 times and I sat on a beach and just did this like resort thing. And it wasn't my thing, but I just kind of got caught up in that year after year after year because it was easy. And a lot of people do that. I hear it all the time. Well, we just go to Florida every year. We go to Mexico every year. Like we do the same thing every year because we don't have to think about it and we're busy and I get it. But that wasn't what
And
I
Mexico
wanted.
is fantastic.
Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with Mexico. I'm not an all-inclusive traveler. I've never
Right.
have been. But I loved Mexico and it was easy and it was close and it's not expensive. I get why people do it, especially like we live in the Midwest. It's cold. Like it's a no-brainer. But I kind of sat there and thought about like all these other places that I wanted to go that I hadn't been. And I just decided like I'm going to prioritize travel, and it's not going to be the travel that I've done before. It's going to be these places that I wonder about that I don't really even know anybody that have been to, but like I want to go to. And so that was places like Turkey and Colombia and Mexico City and Cuba. And I was really, really curious about different parts of the world, but I was struggling to find anybody to go with me. I did right before the pandemic started. Maybe a month before everything happened, I had just gotten back from home from a solo trip to Australia. And I had booked a flight. I saw like a flight deal, just booked a trip on a whim, went to Australia by myself as a challenge. I knew I didn't necessarily want to go alone, but I didn't. I was like, we're just going to do this. So I threw myself in, went to Australia by myself. I loved Australia. I didn't love solo travel. Like for a whole 11-day trip by myself, I thought it got lonely. I mean, there's like good parts about it, but I was like, okay, like I did that. I'm glad I accomplished that. I think everybody should try solo travel, but it was not my thing. And so I just decided like, all right, I definitely want a travel companion. I want at least one. So then I'm wanting to go to these places like Turkey, and it's a little hard to get your friends to sign up to go to Turkey when they're, or Colombia or Mexico City. Half the time they're like, where do you want to go and why? It was really hard to find anybody to travel with. I found a couple of, I went on a couple of trips early pandemic, like once things cleared up a little bit. I went to Colombia, went to Turkey, went to Mexico City with three different friends, and I planned all of those trips and kind of convinced a friend to come along, and they were like, everyone's desperate to travel in 2021, so they're like, I'll go anywhere, like whatever.
Right.
So I planned these trips, and they were to places that my friends had never thought to go, and they were like, holy shit, this is amazing. Like, I never had this place on my list. This is never a place I would have thought to go. I never would have planned this myself. Like, I never would have done this without you. And it got me thinking, like, okay, I think I'm onto something. Like, this serves my own purpose of being able to explore the world and go to these places and not have to do it alone. But also, like, there's a lot of people out there that need somebody like me to kind of show them the way and encourage them and lead them to these places. And so that's kind of how my business was formed.
All right, I love this. I love so many parts of this. I am actually at the tail end of a 1 month solo trip. It's not the only solo trip I've taken. I took a 1 week solo trip earlier this year. I've talked to people who do solo travel. It can feel very isolating, like because you are by yourself. So that is absolutely a challenge. But you hit on the thing that it's like getting other people, if your timing doesn't line up with other people, getting other people to travel
Oh,
can
God.
doesn't always work out. You said on your intake form that you talked about the all-inclusive travel. I'm gonna look at my notes to make sure that I get what you said was, I realized I'd spent a decade playing it safe with the same resort vacations while my adventurous spirit slowly suffocated. And I wanted to make sure I used your words so that I wasn't putting my own little spin on it. So before we talk more about the shift that you made, I want to talk a little bit more about that adventurous spirit. Now, it definitely shows up in what you were talking about, like the taking the solo travel, being the person who's willing to do this. What were things but let's go back to the younger version of you, this earlier adventurous person. What were things that were you looking back at a younger version of yourself and saying, I didn't mean to, but I gave up some of these things that I liked about myself? Like, let's talk about this rediscovery of your adventurer.
Yeah, I think, like I said, if I look back at when I was 21 living in Spain, I think like the trajectory I thought my life was going to go on, it went in a very different direction when I moved here. I met my now ex-husband, and at the time when I moved here, I was planning to move to New York. I wanted to travel, I wanted to do all these things, and then I met somebody and I settled down and I got complacent with my life, even though I wasn't happy ever. When I look back on it, like I was not happy. I got very complacent, and I was just talking to somebody the other day. I'm like, when you look back on your, so I think it was somebody kind of going through a divorce, but I was like, trust me, you're gonna look back on it in the future and it's gonna be a different person. When I look back on my, on who that person was, like, it's not even me. And it's easy to see it now, but you kind of come out of the fog. And so,
Yeah, and one of the questions I ask people, and I'll pause and ask you, so then we'll get back to the story. But in the middle of it, like 2 years, let's not do too far. 2 years into your marriage, if I had run into you and you and I were friends and we went to lunch, if I had asked you if you were happy, what would you have said?
Oh, I'm sure I would have lied and said, yeah.
Yeah, like, because it's one of those things. It's like I don't know how much when we're in the situation, how much we're aware of how we're feeling. You know,
Yeah,
like.
I think you lie to other people, but you're, for me at least, I was lying to myself. Like
Yeah.
I had myself convinced, like this is, I remember telling myself, like this is just how it is. Like this is how relationships are when you're married. Like, it's not always happy. Like, this is nobody's happy. Like, I think I
Yeah.
really deeply convinced myself that, like, this was the safe way to live and that it was fine and everything was just fine. I even lied to my therapist. I mean, it was like a deep-rooted lie.
Well, they there's
So,
a there's actually there's data that's p about 75 to 80% of people who are in therapy are not telling the therapist or the doctor the full truth. So you're not alone there.
yeah.
You're not alone. I mean, it feels dangerous, right? Like, what will it be if I tell you the full truth? Like, what are you going to think about me? What does it say about who I
Well,
am?
that and I think I learned, like, once you start telling people that it's not that you're lying to people, once you start telling people the actual truth, then you have to actually deal with it.
Well,
Like,
and they're
then
going to
you
come
have
back to
to,
you with their opinions. They're like, well, why would you feel that way?
what, yeah, that, or why,
How can
if
you
you're
not like chocolate
unhappy.
ice cream? I just don't.
You, if you're not ready to deal with it and be held accountable for your, you know, like
Yeah.
if your friend came to you and said, I am deeply unhappy in my marriage and blah, 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 and told you all about it, you'd be like, okay, well, maybe we need to make a change, right? And
Yep.
then you're like, well, I don't want to actually change. I'm just venting to you and I'm going to stay stuck and uncomfortable. So nobody wants to tell their friends that because they know what the answer is going to be. And so unless you're ready to actually make those changes, which most people aren't. Let's be real.
Yeah.
Most people, I always say, most people stay stuck. They live their lives unhappy and stuck because it's too hard to make the change. It's not fun. That process of change is not fun and it's uncomfortable and nobody enjoys doing it. So a lot of people are like, I'm just going to play it safe, stay where I am, because at least I know my life right now. I don't know what's going to be on the other side. This is the known entity, so it's easier this way.
Yeah, and I think that I think we do still. I wish I could say that we don't tell young people this anymore, but I don't think that that's actually true. Some young people get a different story, but we do still sell people this idea that if you follow the instructions as laid out to you by the people in your life, which might be your high school guidance counselor or, you know, your summer camp counselor or your friend or your mom or your grandma, and you go to school and you get the certificate or you get the degree and you get the job and you get the partner and you get the apartment or the house or the fence and you get these things, that by checking those boxes, somewhere along the way, magically, happiness falls into your life. And one of the rude awakenings that a lot of adults that I talk to go through is that it actually sometimes requires a little bit more intention than that. Like, it just, those two things are not as closely tied together as they can be, right? Like, if what makes you happy is that set of circumstances, then yay, good for you, off to the races. But for some people, it doesn't work out that way. And then you find yourself. So yeah, so let's talk about your adventurous you. You did some study abroad. What are some other things that you did before you took the job, after the degree and the marriage?
Oh gosh, like I said, just lots of traveling Europe and stuff like that when I was younger. I definitely had like that adventurous spirit. But I would say I've gotten way more adventurous now in my adulthood than maybe I was when I was younger.
Okay. All right. But a lot of travel and a lot of adventure. Okay. And then you realized, and so how did and only tell me, like, I do not want to ask you intrusive questions about your relationship or ask you to talk about somebody who's not a part of this conversation. But how did the all-inclusive resort trip start, like, and become a part of your life and become a habit? Like, when you look back and you're like, oh, where did that begin? Do you remember?
Well, and we just clarify, we didn't do all inclusive resorts. We just did resorts. So
Oh,
like
okay.
we'd go to like Puerto Vallarta and like
Okay.
stay in a hotel, and it's still like a very touristy typical Mexican vacation. We never did like the actual all-inclusive thing, but I grew up going to Puerto Vallarta with my parents. They had I think they had a condo, and so like it was kind of our family vacation. So went there many, many, many years. And then my ex-husband was a diver, and
Okay.
so he liked to go to Cozumel, Mexico, to dive. And
Yes,
so
amazing diving.
we would do Cozumel every year, same thing. So it wasn't that we were like, doing the typical all-inclusive thing. We weren't really doing that, but we were still going to the same place and more or less doing the same thing over and over and over on repeat, just because we were busy. We both had careers and we were like, all right, like winter's coming up. Let's go on a vacation. Do you want to go back to Cozumel? Yep. Do you want to go to the same place? Yep. Let's just do the same thing, book the same flight, take the same trip, and we did that on repeat, like over and over and over and over. I don't even know how many times. Like at this point, I've been to Mexico like well over 20 times. I've never counted, but I've been there a lot. And like I say, great country. But there's other parts of Mexico that are great too. It's a huge country, and most Americans spend their time in resort towns just doing resort things. And a lot of them are doing the all-inclusive thing. So while I was never an all-inclusive traveler, I was still doing a lot of the same types of behaviors of sitting on a beach, having drinks, having a waiter bring me food, like swimming, just like
Yep.
doing the same thing every day for a week. And for a lot of people, that is their idea of relaxation and vacation, and that's fine. I just realized I wanted something more than that.
All right, very good. I do, and so my home base is Miami, Florida. So Cozumel and Tulum and Playa del Carmen, the whole Riviera there is so close, so easy to get to,
Yeah.
and so nice. And it used to be back in the old days, it used to be that you were disconnected when you were there, like your phone didn't work and stuff like
Oh,
that. That's not true
Tulum.
anymore.
Oh my God. Like we went to Tulum when it was, like huts on the
Before it
beach.
was, yes, exactly.
Now it's like my personal hell.
It has really changed. Like, I mean, I still love the fact, I mean, you have to sell your organs and mortgage your house to pay for the hotels now, but I
Yeah.
love that the hotels are literally 10 steps away. That's a slight exaggeration, but you're right on the ocean. Like you
Yeah.
walk out and you're right there. And it's fantastic, but yeah, it has, I have not been in the past couple of years. I have not been since they opened the airport in Tulum, but mostly because of two things. One, the seaweed thing is a real
Oh, yeah.
a real hassle. And then but you can go in the other season. And then the other thing is that I mean, it became like so expensive. So like and when I had little kids, we would shove us all into a small room. But we several years ago, one of the kids was like, let's go back to the name of the resort is La Zebra in Tulum. And I was like, sure. And we're looking at the picture, and my kids are like, how did we fit there? And I was like, because you were smaller, so you slept on that little couch in the picture.
Yeah.
I was like, no, but now we don't do it. And then you can see the picture, the price, and it's like, oh my
Yeah,
God.
we went twice in I went twice in 2020 actually. So I think from my perspective as someone that works in the travel industry, like Tulum has obviously been on this trajectory for a long time,
Long
but
time.
the pandemic rolls around. American travelers can't go anywhere, but we can go to Mexico. So Mexico blows up in general, but the influencers and like the
Yeah.
content creators and those people, like Tulum became the hotspot in the world that you could go to because it was our Bali at the time. Like it was the
Yeah.
only place you could go that had that feeling of being a little bit more exotic than traditional Mexico. And so I was there twice in 2020, and in 3 months I saw it like
Oh,
change.
shift. Oh, so yeah, I don't think, I can't remember. It was a lot, but way
It was
before that.
out of control. I mean, I was in there in 2011,
That's, yeah.
and
Yeah.
then I went in 2020, and it's night and day different. But even like I said, in 2020, from September to New Year's, that place changed, and I think it's been on a path ever since of
Yeah.
just getting out of control.
Out of control. Delightful, but out of control.
Yeah.
So, all right, so back on track. Okay, so you get a divorce, you've still got the job, but you begin to travel, and you do these things. You make a shift. The short version of the shift is you make the decision to walk away from the career that you've got and start a company. And when you say that you walked away from this, I want to get a little more detail if you're willing to share. If you're not, tell me to buzz off. Because like, so did you like walk into work one day, throw your hands up and say, I'm through with you, and walk out? Or how did it actually happen?
So it's interesting. I think so it's actually like literally exactly 4 years, like a few days ago maybe of when I left my last day. I think I put my resignation in September of 2021, and then October was my I did 1 month, but starting in that summer, I was thinking about starting a business, and it was supposed to be at the time, a part-time thing. I had this idea of this travel business, but I wanted to keep my career. So I kind of wanted to have both. I loved my job, but I wanted to travel more. So I started kind of like planning on the side, doing this travel business, and I started to realize these are two very different things. Having a 9 to 5, not only a 9 to 5, but like I'm in a leadership position. I have a big team. I have a lot of responsibilities. And then a business is way more than what I thought it was going to be in terms of work. And so I got to a point where I felt like I was half-assing both. I was kind of like, my heart's not in my job, and I don't have the time to work on the business. And so I'm kind of got like a foot in both worlds. And how the hell am I going to travel and have a job? And like, this doesn't make sense anymore. I went on a trip to Turkey. I brought a friend. I don't know if you've ever seen Cappadocia, Turkey, but I always say it looks like very otherworldly. There's caves everywhere. And one of the big things that people do in Cappadocia is they take the hot air balloons at sunrise. And so you'll see hundreds of hot air balloons up in the sky at the same time with the caves. It's gorgeous. Most beautiful hot air balloon ride I've ever taken. I had this dream of going there and taking this hot air balloon ride. So I finally did it. I'm still working at my job. I went with my friend. I'm in this hot air balloon, and I literally remember the moment I was like, there's no choice. When I get home, I'm quitting my job. I was like, there other people need to see the world. And I was just like, it was just like a done decision. So I got home. Of course, like had to think it through and, like figure out how I was going to actually do this. But like, I didn't spend a lot of time like figuring out how I was going to quit my job. I basically like ran some numbers and decided what I needed to live on and how much money I needed to make minimally to be able to survive for a while. And I had a few conversations with people that I worked with, and then I went to my boss and slid over my letter and said I was done. I put in my 30 days notice, but it wasn't an easy decision by any means. I remember like the night before I was talking to my former boss from years ago, who's a mentor of mine, and telling her I was really struggling with this decision, and she guided me through it. And I had first put my resignation into my HR department, and I remember like literally my finger like hovering. Oh, I was in my office at night. I came to work at night, wrote up this letter, and then literally I remember sitting there being like, the only thing that's gonna like set this in motion is me hitting this button right here, but I can't do it. And so I sat there for probably 30 minutes, just like, oh my God, like I can't do it. Finally, I hit the button. It was done, left, went and probably drank heavily, and it was a done deal at that point. But once I decided it, like that was the hardest decision. It was just like doing it. And like once you like make the decision and you're like, okay, well now this is the path we're on. It didn't become easy by any means, but making that decision, even though I didn't have the answers at the time, I had no idea how this was going to work. Everyone was like, are you nuts? Like, what about the most common thing was, what about your health insurance? Like, what are you going to do?
No,
And
but
I'm
it's a
like,
legit thing because we tie it to the jobs, which is a crazy thing.
absolutely.
But I think I love when you say that the decision, I don't love it. I mean, I don't love it because it is hard. The emphasis on the decision, because that's the reason that I focus the conversations on the show in that spot, because we are very invested in, what are the steps people took? What are the 3 things I need to do to turn my life around? What are the actions? But the harder thing to see is that the empowerment is often in that decision-making process, seeing the choices and picking what you want to do and trying to align it with both who you have been and who you want to be in the future. And that sounds ooey gooey, but those are the things that we're trying to line up. So, like, if you are a carnivore and you want to be a vegetarian, like, lining up those choices so that the transition makes sense is the path. And the steps are easier once you've made the choice, right? So, when you're thinking about it, you're like, oh, do I want to do it? It's hard to take action. But once you make the choice, it does become more evident.
Yeah, it's
Or it can.
I think a lot of people like they want to do something, But the question is, like, do you know what steps you need to take to get there, and are you willing to do them? And I think that's kind of what sets people apart, is like there's a lot of dreaming and like fantasizing about like another life, and whether it's I want a different job, or don't want to be with my partner anymore, or I want a house, whatever it is, like
Or
we
it can
all.
be much more basic stuff. I want to get a job. I want to run a marathon. I want to go to grad school. Any of those things, like
Absolutely.
any of those things, like, there's definitely a hurdle when you don't know what it's going to take. But like, so, like I run marathons. I used to do Ironman triathlons. People are like, "Well, how do you do this?" And I'm like, "No, it's you just do it."
You
You have
start
to
running.
decide. You have to decide to do it, and then you just, put yourself in a spot to do it. My favorite question used to be like, "How do you get up so early?" I'm like, "Well, the alarm goes off, and I get out of bed." And I was like, that. Those are the actual steps. I mean, the why I do it is the bigger question, right? So,
Fun fact, my podcast episode I just released today is about an international runner who runs across countries and all over the world. And we talk about how I do not run, but he does, and he has some very interesting stories. So.
yeah, and again, that's the people. I love running. For me, it's very soothing. But I also understand that most people do not love it. Right? I'm not the person who's like going to convince people to do it. And I've never done that. I've never been drawn to that type of running. Like, there are people who run across countries or run
Forrest Gump style.
right, yeah, and run the entire Pan American Highway. There's a guy whose name I'm spacing. I'll come up with it in a second. He runs across the United States, and he's done it in a different way, like east to west, pushing all of his stuff in like a chariot, like a stroller. And he loves it. He loves it. I'm not going to sign up for that, but it's very impressive. Okay, so you decide to launch this business. So the way you laid it out, I'm going to share with you how I think you did this, and you tell me whether or not I misunderstand. It sounds banana cakes to me. You gave yourself 30 days to plan a travel tour to Mexico City. Is that for real? Is that the story? Because that's insanely fast.
I had the trip planned, but I gave myself 30 days to transition from my full-time career to starting a business that,
Okay.
like when I quit my job, for example, I didn't have a website, I didn't have a social media following. Like I think I filed for an LLC, but I didn't have any formalized things in motion to be making money. Let's just put it that way. Like I didn't have a proper business plan. Like I did not. I always tell people, like, when you're looking for like how to start a business the proper way, like don't look at me, because
Well, but on the flip side, if you listen to enough starting stories, the number of people who have big businesses and they run into somebody that's like, "Hey, do you have a business account?" And they're like, "No." "Do you have this for?" And they're like, "No." And they've built these huge things. So it's like, it's both sides. It's like, don't let it stop you because you don't
absolutely.
know, how to do it.
I always just say I am the poster child of someone that like quit their job to follow a dream and it worked out. But
Yeah.
that's certainly not what I would tell people to do. Like just quit and everything will just fall into place. Like, I don't know about that. I had a good enough plan to like have an idea of what I was gonna do, but I didn't have the time to do it working full time. So I basically gave myself a little bit of cushion to like, all right, we're gonna quit our job. 30 days is my timeline for quitting my job and wrapping things up there. And then I'm just going like full speed ahead with starting a travel business. At that time, I had a trip to Mexico City planned with four women on it. Normally my trips have like 12 plus people on it. So the four women were all my friends. They didn't even know each other. I found four women, convinced them to come. Basically, like that money covered my cost to take them. I didn't make any money off of that trip. So I had no income coming in when I quit my job and started my travel business. Like this first tour I took, which I'm leaving Saturday, this is my fifth one. It's like my inaugural Mexico City trip we do for Day of the Dead every year. And this is actually ironically my last one for now. I wasn't making money. I just was like, we're gonna, I firmly believed like I was going to figure this out and I had to put in my time and the money would come. I know that sounds really stupid, but I had enough of an idea of like how this is gonna work and I just needed the time to focus on it.
Well, and if you want to zhuzh it up in like businessy terms, you had an idea and you were going through the steps to validate it so you could show proof of concept to the next batch of people.
You can't
Yeah.
sell a tour that you haven't taken. I can't sell
Right.
people on the concept of traveling with me when they've never seen anyone travel with me and they've never seen
Yeah.
anybody go to Mexico City. And so that still is the case when I do a scouting trip for with every tour that I do. I was just talking to my partner about this yesterday. I did an adult summer camp this summer. It was crazy.
Those look like fun.
It was insane. It was so fun. But like, I've never done this before. I invented it. I pulled it out of thin air. I
Yeah.
invented it. I had no proof of concept. I had to go through it and experience it. It's one of the hardest things I've ever done. It's one of the most badass things I've ever done. It was so cool. And now when I go to sell this for next year, like, of course it's going to be like a huge success because I have 30 people that had an amazing time. I have tons of photos, videos, testimonials. Like, I can show people, but I knew when I did it this year, I'm not going to make that much money. It's going to be really freaking hard. Like, I'm doing this for future me so that next time this won't be so hard. So, yeah, you
Yeah.
have to be willing to kind of go through the sometimes not only not making money, but maybe even losing money at the beginning for what's going to come in the future.
And you have to get used to selling something that doesn't exist because there's, it's like, it's like, well, how many clients do you have? Well, when you sign up, that will be one.
Yeah, you got to start somewhere.
Everybody starts somewhere, and that's the reality of the situation. But before you see somebody else do it, or before you live it yourself, it's hard to know that that is totally fine. No one's going to turn around like and be like, yeah, well, actually people might. Well, if you haven't done it before, like, so, all right, very good. Okay, so you launched this with the trip to Mexico City. It takes off. I love that it was so fast, but you were doing, so now the way I see this being described is like you had been doing this as a side hustle, which like now they're saying it's like you're 9 to 5 and then people refer to it as the 5 to 9, which is either before or after the day, which to me sounds like such a grueling life, but and should not be romanticized, but it is the way that side hustles shift. So you quit your job. How is Laura today different from the Laura who was married and staying at resort, traveling over and over again to scuba in Cozumel? What has changed in your life as a result of making this break?
Oh gosh, I mean, so many things. Like I said, I'm really not the same person in any way, shape, or form. I mean, I'm no longer in an unhappy relationship. I'm actually in a very happy relationship now. I have my own house, my own life. I'm not employed by anybody. I live life on my terms. I designed the life that I want. I travel freely and I'm much more adventurous. I'm much more risk adverse and like tolerant of taking risks, I would say. Like, I'm just a different person. I'm part of that's just age. I mean, that's 20, 25 year old me and 42 year old me. So, everyone can compare. You're not going to be the same. But my life looks nothing like that life, other than I still have my dog who's 15. He's still
Ah,
here
all
taking a
right.
nap over in the corner. But everything else about my life is changed entirely.
Very interesting. All right, so now let's take, before we go to the final fun questions, we've talked a lot about the travel business actually, but let's intentionally and directly tell people, what you do, what is the name of your business, and how they can find you and connect with you after they listen and watch to this episode.
Sure. Yeah, I have a group travel company, if you haven't gathered that already. It's called Laura Erickson Group Trips, and I take people on off the beaten path, culturally immersive experiences around the world. So we go to Cuba, Morocco, Greece, Colombia, Turkey, Kenya, Japan's coming up in the future, all over the place. And like I said, I also have a summer camp that I run in Wisconsin, which is super fun. And so the concept is just a bunch of strangers traveling together. And like I said, I was that person that didn't have anybody to travel with. And so I wanted to build this business around one, giving people a community of other people like them that want to explore the world, and taking the logistics and the planning of travel off the table for you so that you can just show up and actually enjoy the trip and not have to be the person in charge. Because I know what it's like to be on vacation, but running your friend's group trip and, trying to keep everything in motion. It's a little bit of a different experience for the person who's the planner. So, you can find me at lauraerickson.com. My last name does not have a K in it, so it's Ericson. Instagram, Lola Whiskey. Facebook, you can find me on Laura Erickson. And then I have a podcast a travel podcast that I launched this summer called Type 2 Travel. It's based on Type 2 fun, which is those experiences that you have that maybe are a little bit challenging in the moment, but then when you look back on them, they tend to be your fondest memories.
Very nice. All right, so group travel, solos and partners, or like who's, yes, everybody. All right.
Yeah, I have, small groups of friends that come. I have sisters, I have partners. Like it's a blend, but I would say 50% or more of my groups are solo travelers.
It's a huge wave, I think, of travel where there are groups that are pulling together, making space for solo travel, travelers who don't want to be necessarily alone. Like, so I think that's very exciting. Okay, so for everybody who's watching and listening, the link for this company, for Laura's company, is in the show notes, or the video description. But the easiest way to get the links for how to find people is always to be subscribed to the Imperfect Adulting email list. The reason it's easier is just because it shows up in your inbox and you can click on it. You don't have to remember it from your time on your walk or your treadmill or sitting in your airplane without a pen. So that is always there for you. All right. Laura, are you ready for the final fun questions?
I'm ready.
You're so ready. All right. These are just meant to be fun and rapid fire. What is something that you've purchased for yourself recently that you love that has improved your life? You don't have to overthink this. It doesn't have to be anything complicated. What is something that you bought recently that has really been great that you will share?
Oh my gosh, this is going to sound like the dumbest answer, but a luggage scale.
Oh, no. I think that makes perfect sense.
I just put this in my upcoming newsletter of like my top five travel purchases recently. It's like $10 on Amazon. I have had so many situations where not so much on the way there, but on the way home that my luggage is overweight because I buy wine and things get heavy. And so $10 will save you tenfold in the future. I would strongly, strongly suggest
So,
investing in a luggage scale.
yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I definitely have been on the trips where, like, especially traveling with the family, where we're at the weigh-in scale, and we've got all the bags open, and we're like juggling things to
You're
avoid the
like
luggage fees.
praying. You're like praying.
Exactly. And then the other thing is that, without the luggage scale, which I have had in different seasons in my life, but sometimes I don't have it. And then I'm like on the home scale and I'm like, okay, I weigh this. And then if I hold the bag, somebody come and
Oh
look at the number and tell me what it
yeah,
says.
I've done that too. That yeah, when your bag weighs 70 pounds and you're trying to like hold it up to weigh
Yeah.
yourself, yeah, no,
It's
spend
hard.
ten
It's
dollars.
hard. But yeah,
Spend ten
exactly.
dollars.
There you go. Luggage. All right. That's a very good tip. All right. I love that. Thank you for sharing. Okay. Number two, do you yourself read or listen to books either one? No preference either way. And if so, do you remember one that you have read or listened to recently that you thought was great and want to share?
I do. I'm weird. I do audiobooks and I also buy the physical copy, but then like listen to the audiobook. I do a lot of podcasts. I would say lately I've been doing a lot more podcasts than actual books, but, oh gosh. I was
You
reading
can do a
an,
shout out to a podcast if that's easier.
oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'm actually, I don't know if people are going to find this interesting, but lately I've been listening to a podcast about
You're
podcasting.
building a
So
podcast. It's
that's.
very meta, but I think that's good. I think that's
I've
good. Yeah.
also really into like short, as a person who does, I know you said you did like 45-minute episodes and mine are like 45 to an hour. I listen to the ones that are like quick where I'm like, oh, this is only 20 minutes. I can listen to this quick, you know?
Yeah.
So, I'm very into like those little micro episodes where you feel like you've accomplished something in 20 minutes.
Very cool. I totally get it. And there are even some that, and people have in the podcasting space, people have like an argument that's like not, in my case, actually an argument, but they're like, what's the perfect length for a podcast? I'm like, I don't, it's going to depend on who you are. Like 90 seconds, 3 hours,
Right.
it totally depends. All right. So very good. Okay. So as a traveler, I sometimes don't put questions in that relate to the interview, but this one actually does. All right. So have you ever lost your luggage in a travel, like lost, like not delayed, but have you ever had your luggage like lost in traveling?
No. I've definitely had it delayed and a lot like a long, long time ago, years ago, I've had it like not turn up for a few days or something. But no, I've been very lucky. And now I put AirTags in all my luggage, which helps. But I have seen like people on my trips definitely have gone through some luggage. Like as a professional traveler, I tangentially hear all the time
Yeah.
about people losing luggage. But I would say for the most part, it shows back up. It's
Yeah.
just about it's a matter of when. And if you're on your way somewhere and your luggage shows up in 2 weeks, that's not very helpful.
Not
So.
very helpful. No, exactly. And everybody, people, people do get quirky about how they handle it. And, there are certain things that only come, in the carry-on bag, never going to go to the
Yep.
side of it kind of thing. Or one of my kids lost, the luggage was delayed and they got it back at the end of a trip and they went through a period. I don't think they're still like this, but they would not do anything other than carry on for a while.
Yep, that happens.
And now with the luggage fees, I don't know if you've seen any of the people who are
Yes.
doing the discount airlines, and they're like, they just sort of,
Wait,
they just
put all the
wear
clothes
everything,
on.
right? Like shoving all their clothes in their pockets and things like that. That's very funny. That's very.
The problem is like people develop these really creative hacks, but then they decide to post them on social media, and it's like, do you think airlines don't see this? Like Ryanair, if you ever look at Ryanair's social media, they are brilliant and hilarious because they just mock travelers
Oh,
and they're like,
funny.
wow, like look how creative you are. Like you're posting it on the internet. We can see you. Like,
You
like
put
if
your
you're,
underwear in your pocket. It's
yeah,
clever.
like that's great that you're doing this, but now you've just announced it to the airline. So now they're like on to you and they're
Yeah.
looking for it. So I'm like, good job.
So funny. All right. That's it, Laura Erickson. Thank you so much for being a wonderful guest today on the show.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. It was fun.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adult to your adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.